found this in Ganarum. Ganamir near.
What is it?
Well, it's, it's
sick performance.
Welcome to Symptaholics, guys. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is...
Guy Davis.
And returning...
Faith Hertzberg.
There we go.
Good to see you.
Yeah, hey, I'm not lost.
We thought you got caught off like Franklin in the transporter beam.
You know, that would have actually been a kinder fate.
You became Scotty's eyebrow whenever he got beamed out.
Yeah,
the mole on the wee one's chin.
Because Franklin,
one of the mini scales.
Franklin is no more.
Yeah, no, I've actually been involved with a PGI tournament, which is Piranha Games. They make a game called MechWarrior Online, and they've started up an international tournament. And I've actually have been running a 12-man team in there, which has required us being there 4 to 5 times a week to practice. And then we've got anywhere between 3 to 9 matches a week that we've been playing. We've actually been streamed online on their Twitch page.
Wow.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
And we've also had Skype issues. So, like, communication, we had, like, our communications were jammed by Romulans, or i.e. Microsoft.
Jammed. They were eaten.
Yeah.
The relays were down and not responding. We had to do full repairs.
It was like a piranha fish instead of a babble fish. It didn't translate. It just took it.
Eaten by the data stream.
It just died.
We have data issues.
Data issues.
You know, it happens when we're having to cover such fast distances.
Yes. We've got Georgia. South Carolina represented.
North Carolina.
North Carolina. Go ahead.
It's been so long. You forgot.
It's somewhere in the south. I'm somewhere in the north, and Guy is somewhere in the middle of the country.
Yeah, here, I'm always middle of the road, sort of.
let's just generalize. You're south. I'm north. He's west.
There you go.
Yeah, no need to get technical with it because I'm just
going to name every state until I get the wrong one or the right one or so.
Let's or something like that.
The first time.
I just know you go to Dragon Con in Georgia and South Carolina is so close to North Carolina. Might as well be the same state, right?
Hey, I cover a lot of ground every year trying to do these conventions and that. So, you know, it's all good.
Where are you going to be? Might as well live in those places, right? Everywhere you are.
Technically do for like 6 to 8 days out of every 3 or 4 months, it feels like.
Oh. So, it's good to have you back.
Yeah, it is. It's good to have you back at the helm there.
I've really missed you guys. I really missed you guys. It's back to sanity.
Back to sanity. Or
wait,
structured
is sanity.
This is structured insanity.
I don't know if this is what I would call sanity.
Structured insanity.
It's more structured chaos than what I've been dealing with. We started off with 93 teams with the PGI tournament. We are down to less than 50 from teams withdrawing.
Wow.
Yeah, it was the highest dropout I've ever seen in a competitive environment.
That's a lot. That is kind of a lot.
Oh, yeah. Very, very high stress.
Yeah, no kidding. Wow.
So I'm very, very happy to be home now.
Welcome back.
Yes.
So, with news, we got something interesting? Question marks, dot, 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 question marks?
It's interesting.
From San Diego Comic-Con with this Star Trek TV series announcement. We've got a name for the show, as well as maybe a ship. I hope not.
I don't know. I like it.
I don't. It doesn't fit with any of the aesthetics we've come to know with Starfleet design. It looks like too foreign. It looks like two foreign things are smushed together. I don't know. It looks like a Klingon. It looks like there's a Klingon and a Nausicaa banging, and it's just so not pretty.
Hey, you know, you have to screw up the design a few times before you can get to something as classically gorgeous and sexy as the Enterprise, all right? You got to seriously fuck up to get there.
There's so many beautiful other ships that they could have gone with that have been designed by other people that are just absolutely gorgeous, and I'm not a huge fan of this. Although, there is some, you know, light at the end of the tunnel for me that they said the ship design is not final. So
right, but they are...
Which means they're going to blow it up.
Again.
Sorry.
But I mean, the thing is that it's a Ralph McQuarrie design. Clearly they're taking it from the Planet of the Titans.
Unreleased Star Trek thing.
Yeah, the Star Trek thing that they were working on. And that's clearly what they were headed with. And the thing is that I wasn't sure I was hot on Ralph McQuarrie's design 25 years ago whenever I first saw that artwork. But I've had 25 years of that picture, you know, of the five or six pictures that McQuarrie did for that particular design. So actually, that may be why I actually don't mind it, because it's grown on me.
Well, I mean, I've seen it pop up here and there, you know, throughout my life, but I never, like, I'm like, oh, that's kind of ugly. And I never, like, spend a lot of time focusing on it. I mean, I think the coolest thing about the trailer is that they're building it inside an asteroid. I think that's kind of a cool concept. I mean, that makes more sense than building it on the planet Earth and blasting it into space. Because, I mean, I'm sure they're just harvesting, you know, raw mineral, you know, components, you know, metal from that, you know, asteroid they're inside of, which is really kind of cool.
I'm never opposed to new ship designs or anything like that, because, to be honest, as beautiful as the Enterprise is, I am actually not a big fan of the various Federation ships themselves. You know, I like the Klingon ships personally.
I love Klingon ships. I mean,
you know, no offense to Andy Probert, but I did not like the D. I thought it looked like they shrunk the warp nacelles and blew up the saucer and then made the saucer ovaloid and...
It just looked awkward. Rounded
thing. Yeah.
I mean, it's Enterprise D still looks weird, but it's got curves and it's pretty. This thing only has curves on the saucer.
It looks cute and adorable and defenseless.
What?
The Enterprise D.
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's a bowl.
It doesn't look very mean.
It doesn't. That lean aggression is nice to see in a ship.
But it's you know, it's the Enterprise D is awesome because it's deceptive.
It's deceptive. It's got
16 different phaser banks on it. Like, I mean, you only see them use like the saucer phaser banks in the movie,
it's
but they've
like
got
the
like
kitten that turns into a werepanther or some crap like that. But still,
I mean, it was supposed to look fluffy. I mean, it's basically a luxury liner in space that happens to have the most advanced weapons and most advanced everything else on it.
Well, it could be a killer My Little Pony, but it's still a My Little Pony.
Yeah, it's like they're going to be giggling as they die.
They'll die, but they're giggling the entire way.
I'd rather make somebody wish they'd wore their brown pants to the war. So, yeah,
Enterprise is definitely soft looking. Definitely soft looking as far as like starships go. But I liked that. I liked it was like kind of sexy.
Yeah, and as time went on, I mean, I'm knocking.
Yeah, but you don't.
As time went on, I really did start to grow a fondness for the D, obviously.
Yes.
But, you know, but yeah, I remember the first time I saw it. This is one of those things. When they were leaking information of Next Gen, they had leaked information that, you know, back in the early days, that it was going to be an Excelsior class.
Yeah.
Or a modified Excelsior, which we ultimately saw as the Enterprise B later. But, you know, so I remember sitting there drawing Eternal Excelsiors, trying to come up with the idea of what they were going to do. And then it doesn't look anything like an Excelsior class.
No, it doesn't.
It's just so weird.
Although it does look more like an Excelsior than it does look like the Enterprise A, or, you know, NTC 1701 nothing.
Yeah, so
it's nacelles. I mean, they're not nearly as big, but they're sort of shaped the same way. The saucer is absolutely huge compared to the rest of it. I mean,
it's not the size of your nacelles that matter.
No. In this case, I really do feel like it is. I'm just
yeah. Saying. Well, it did make the show really awkward. Like, well, now that we're being sizes,
let's. I like me some big nacelles, like on the Enterprise, JJ Enterprise. Those nacelles are huge.
Yeah, that's Scotty. Tracks of nacelles. Yes, ooh,
she's got huge tracks of nacelles. But also, the show is called Star Trek Discovery, which, if you abbreviate it, is STD.
It makes you wonder exactly what that's they're discovering.
Maybe the captain will be more promiscuous than Kirk. We can only hope.
Is it female?
Or she could be more promiscuous than Kirk. That would be interesting as well.
That is wrong of me. I apologize. No, I don't apologize.
There's rumor it's going to be a black captain, black female captain.
Oh, God. And they named the show STD.
Oh, that's racist. That's
it is. It's shame on you, CBS.
Oh. I just don't. Very I mean, I'm still super excited for the show. Brian Fuller, I love, and Nicholas Meyer did amazing things with Star Trek. I mean, this has nothing to do with hopefully the how the writing's gonna go. Maybe they didn't think about STD. Maybe they didn't name it. Maybe CBS was like, you should call it this, and they just had to be like, okay, I don't know. But I mean, I'm still excited to see what they're going to write, regardless of what the ship looks like, and regardless of the feelings of the name of the show or the way the trailers are looking. I'm excited to see what kind of stories they're going to tell and when it's going to be placed, because they still didn't tell us when, but they said it's Prime Universe. And I would have kind of assumed that just from the ship design, because the all the Kelvin timeline ships have that glass pane where the the bridges.
Yeah.
This didn't have that, so. To me, I mean, I didn't need to be told that it was, Prime Universe, because, I mean, it would just be outside of the design aesthetics of the JJ universe if it, didn't have that pane of glass. Or transparent aluminum, which breaks like glass, apparently.
Well, yeah.
Well, with excessive force.
Doesn't metal, supposed to warp and bend, not shatter? Unless it's, frozen?
I think that I've come up with a new title for the show. We could call it Star Trek Universal People in Discovery. Then it'd just be stupid.
No, because there's so many places in Discovery of what? Their sexuality, their emotions, their personal environment. You need context.
Well, at least they've discovered they're in a Star Trek TV series.
Go overboard, they'll feel that way. They feel stupid.
They've discovered they're in a Star Trek series and they're trying desperately to get out.
Oh, wow.
That's, I don't know. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
We have killed Faith.
Oh, no.
We've had her back for 5 minutes and she's already gone.
Yeah, I know.
Right? She's gone critical.
Speaking of going critical, we all just recently saw Star Trek Beyond. I know this is like a week and a half late, but here it is.
Yep.
It's just the way our recording schedule works out, and then the way our releasing schedule works out, so this will be even later.
Well, amazingly, Geek Tank's still not going to beat you. And we recorded the night of.
Woo! So, wow.
I think you're still beating Geek Tank out. Oh, well.
Hey, we got one pony in the race still. And it's not about who gets there first. It really is.
Yes.
It's not. It's how you wiggle your warp nacelles, yes.
How you wiggle,
make I was going to say quality of the difference of perspectives, but there you go.
Make sure they've got ample support.
You always need ample support. You don't want to sprain that.
We have just, seriously dumped right down into the depths of all kinds of stuff in this particular episode, haven't we?
I'm back! Hi, guys!
Well, I prefer to think of this as foreshadowing.
Yes, it's
I thought you were going to say something else for a second there.
What?
Foreshadowing.
Like what?
No, I thought he was going to say foreplay, not 5 o'clock shadow. Foreplay for the ship?
It could have happened, but let's kind of do a quick recap of the movie, because I think the movie overall plot is pretty simple, and it can be kind of explained easily. So okay. I would say Kirk away mission fails to negotiate peace with miniature cave trolls from The Hobbit.
Yes.
They look like miniature cave trolls, and so he fails at, you know, giving them this artifact that they, you know, their enemies wanted to make peace with them with. Kirk is kind of tired, he's kind of sad, and gives a, you know, melancholy mission, you know, captain's log. They go to the Yorktown to kind of refresh, get themselves better. Spock gets bad news about Spock. Oh, by the way, spoilers!
Yeah,
spoilers.
I guess it should be straightforward that there's all kinds of spoilers going on.
We're not, I mean, we're going to be talking spoilers. About the movie. You should expect that, and there's no apology for not realizing this beforehand.
Yeah, definitely. By the way, spoilers. I'll put it in the show notes. But yes, by the way, spoilers. Just in case. So Spock hears bad news about other Spock.
Other Spock has passed on.
Yes,
kicked the feels,
and got some nice. You know, He got some of his other self's stuff from the Vulcans that were already on the station. A ship from this nearby nebula comes by and has a sole survivor on it, and she says she's a captain and she needs help because her crew has been stranded. Kirk, being the gallant, amazing guy he is like, "Oh, let's go do that. Let's go help this lady out." And they fly through the nebula and right into a swarm of Krall's ships. They cut off the nacelles almost immediately, and this scene to me felt like it was like 45 minutes of the movie where the Enterprise is just getting wrecked. The crew
they definitely took their time with that.
Yeah, it was painful to watch, but we'll talk more about that as we discuss the film. The ship breaks into many pieces, the crew is separated, and they basically have to try to get back together, save the rest of the main crew's got to find each other. They've got to get back and save the rest of the crew. They meet an alien along the way. She helps them with this other ship called the Franklin. Huh, we mentioned Franklin twice this episode. And
we're going to mention Franklin a lot.
And, you know, like I said earlier, you know, nacelles need some ample support, and those nacelles got clipped really quick, so they were not supported well.
Yeah, there was
foreshadowing.
Well, they were pretty big. I mean, to be fair.
They were pretty big, but you should have had better support structures for those, because I'm sorry, those are very slender supports for such very big nacelles.
Krall's cut
you, like, cross your heart supports for those.
Yeah, like a cross-strut support or something like that.
Exactly. Something inadequate. Underwire. Something.
And you can make it pretty. You can really do make it pretty. It can be sexy.
Krall cut that bra wire with no effort at all.
Snipped it with the shears.
Yep. We have no
the wire cutters for this
show. We have no pretense whatsoever.
No shame.
None at all. This artifact that Kirk tried to give away to the miniature cave trolls is coveted by Krall. Krall eventually gets this artifact, and it's some kind of biological weapon that's released from a turntable thing, like a small turntable. That he can clip onto things and it just kills things.
You are so hipster.
Yeah, hipster. Krall's definitely hipster, especially once you find out his backstory.
Yep.
Krall's big plan is to go to the Yorktown, which is the big starbase they parked at, to destroy it so he can bring Chaos back to this peaceful Federation.
Because Chaos was so much better.
Because Chaos is awesome. Apparently, he was a fan of Get Smart and loved Chaos, the bad guys.
Yeah.
So that was his thing, and they probably had it on their ship in their historical document logs, along with the sabotage music.
Yep.
God, it's like my favorite part. I got the beats of the screaming. Sorry, I get really happy about that part.
And then, basically, they find out Krall's plan. He wants to go there. He takes his entire swarm army through the nebula. They jumpstart to this really old ship, a warp 4 ship, Enterprise, and they figure out that Mars Attacks was also a movie that was on the Franklin, and they use the Mars Attacks plot to destroy all of Krall's ships by playing music over the radio.
hey, man, this is a proven sound military tactic.
Yes, Mars attack.
It worked in Macross as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but there are so many instances. I mean, we've actually utilized this in our armed forces as a form of riot deterrence. So
it actually is true.
Yeah,
using music. The power.
It does work.
The power of music. Anyway,
hey, if you really want to think about the power of music, just look back to the 60s and it actually gave us Star Trek. So,
yeah. Gene Roddenberry, all that music. He was having way too much fun with his.
And exploration.
Yeah. Exploring all sorts of. Like Discovery. Anyway, Kirk uses the Franklin to stop the last three ships. And a fist fight ensues while they try to, Krall tries to put the stuff into the poison weapon into the filtration system. Kirk ultimately stops him, and Bones and Spock save Kirk from getting sucked out into space. And there's a wonderful birthday party for Kirk at the end of the film, Scotty does order three Romulan ales just for himself, and Chekhov goes and talks about how a wee little old lady from Russia actually invented scotch.
Yep.
Anyway, the Enterprise A is built in fast-forward motion, and the whole crew gets a really nice send-off where they all say part of, like, the space, the Final Frontier, monologue, which is really nice.
Yeah, that was really sweet. Like, that actually kind of got me in the feels a bit.
And the most thing that got me in the feels, like, one of the things you see toward the end of the film is Spock opens up Spock's photo album, and there's a picture of the entire crew from Star Trek V standing on the bridge.
Yeah.
And that was just like, oh my gosh, like, that guy, that, like, made me tear up.
Oh, yeah, there are a couple of parts like that where they mentioned the crew or Nimoy, and I was just like, nope, I'm done.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. The Franklin is NX. What was it?
326. Yeah, 326.
Which is Nimoy's birthday, March 26th. Or 25th, whatever the date was. I don't remember the numbers exactly. I'm terrible with numbers, but the Franklin serial number was meant to reflect Nimoy's birthday, which is why it's so absurdly large compared to NX-01, even though it's an older ship.
Yes, but there's a lot of discussion about whether it's older or whether it's just the, because he says it was the first Warp 4 ship, but that could have been a title, you know? It could have been, this is the first three-cylinder car, you know? Doesn't mean we didn't have 8-cylinder cars or 16-cylinder cars. This is the first one that we made that was 3 cylinders. Isn't that great?
Well, I've heard two separate things. It's like maybe they just decided to start building smaller, slower ships just because they needed more ships for the Romulan War. Or this could legitimately be an older ship that just happened to be around for a really long time. And the Captain Krall, who was, previously a Starfleet captain who was previously a Mako fighter. In the movie they say Mako disbanded after the Federation was formed, so that's like the season finale of Enterprise. So the ship could just be really old, and he just could have just been given a commission of this old ship because the old captain retired. I mean, either way, it's fine.
I had heard was actually that it was because it was meant to be a long-term exploration, and what they had that was faster at the time was not sustainable over time. They actually with the longer, the older engine that was a lot easier to maintain for a longer period of time since it was supposed to be out there for like a 10 to 15 year mission before it came home. So I had heard was because, and that actually made sense at the time because their newer engines were not very stable and required a refit at least every year.
Mm-hmm.
So my inner nerd remembered something.
Woo!
Yay!
Either one is plausible, but I mean, like it makes sense either way. I mean, but we know Krall didn't have the ship until after the season finale because he wasn't Mako, and Mako got disbanded, and he got the ship. Whenever the ship was originally built, they didn't really specify. It could have been after Enterprise, it could have been before. Because there's lots of really good, we've mentioned three very plausible mentions.
Options.
Of, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And any of them work really well. Like I said earlier, the photo album of them standing on the ship, on the bridge from the original crew, from the movies, that was super touching. That was probably one of my favorite parts of the film. Another favorite thing of the film is that so many of the cast, main cast members actually got screen time. I mean, like, I think by the time, you know, Kirk and Chekhov had gotten back to the Enterprise to try to throw them off about where the relic was, is that by that time in the movie, Chekhov already had as much screen time or more than the first two movies combined.
Yeah.
And it just was so great to see, you know, Chekhov get lots of lines and lots of screen time, and and Scotty to get lots of lines and lots of screen time, and Bones to get lots of screen time. Like, Bones was basically just a cameo in both films. It was really sad. So was Scotty. So I was really glad to see the your main characters actually get some decent, really good screen time and interaction with each other. And all the time Spock and Bones are together is just absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, that was really good. I enjoyed that.
Yeah, I agree.
I think the horseshit line was probably just absolutely amazing. And like, I don't see what excrement of any kind has to do with this. And then
what cracks me up about that is that I had just been talking about how, you know, there are a lot of things that could fit in Star Trek, but I didn't think that language, you know, harsh language really did. But then that sequence came up, and I was like, well, okay, I stand corrected, because those two actually did fit very well.
Well, I mean,
I think those are the only two swear words in the entire movie. And Bones has been known to swear in the original series, so, I mean, it's not...
Right. But like, when they added Data saying shit in Generations, it just stood out like a sore thumb. It was like, why did you do that? That didn't even fit. It didn't even make sense.
You know, I'm actually glad they addressed that, because like, that is one of the universal commonalities that we actually have across every single language is we all swear. And it's kind of nice to see somebody exchange that between each other and actually make it, you know, understandable across culture. It's like, wait, now I do see the point.
Well, Spock totally took it, made it his own. He's like, indeed, what you said was horseshit.
Yeah.
He just turned it around on him. That was amazing. I love that scene.
Yeah, the one-upsman was good.
And then, I mean, all their scenes together were great. We're like, you know, they're talking about life and death and, you know, what that means. And it's just, to me, this was the most Star Trek feeling movie probably since Star Trek VI.
Yes.
Yeah, I will agree with that.
I mean, this felt more like Star Trek than any of the TNG films, unfortunately. I'm sad that none of the TNG films really felt like Star Trek. I mean, First Contact was a great movie. I love First Contact. That's still probably the best TNG movie, but it just felt like action movie.
There's like something missing.
Yeah, whereas like this was so Star Trek. This is, I mean, just all the interactions of the people, all the callbacks. I mean, it was just brilliant. The Aldarian brandy bottle Kirk was drinking in his quarters until Bones came in. And then, you know, like I mentioned at the, you know, end of the movie, that where Chekhov was, you know, trying to steal credit, you know, for Russia's inventing something, which he always did in the original series.
Yeah. I liked the relationship between Scotty and, oh God, now I forgot her name.
Jayla.
Mm-hmm. Like she was awesome. Like the two of them, the way they interacted was great. And, like, her whole perception of music was just like, yay.
I just like the beats and the screaming that helps me think.
Yes. Yes, it does. I'm sitting there going, man, somebody after my own heart. This is how I do my stuff for my cosplay. The loudest music with the heaviest beat.
Yep.
I thought Jayla was brilliant. I thought Sophia Boletta was brilliant playing Jayla.
You know, that's actually my daughter's favorite person from the movie, is Jayla.
Oh, she was great and a great new character. And I loved how at the end, they're like, well, you can join Starfleet. And like...
she's like, do I have to wear the uniform? Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And there was like, hi, Kevin, I see you're still not wearing pants.
Yep. Yes.
The little cave troll from The Hobbit.
Yeah, we got a cave troll who joined us. That was really funny.
Yeah, it was so good, and I really hope that they bring her back, and maybe she will be in the next one, because I mean, J.J. Abrams has said they're not going to recast Chekhov since Anton Yelchin's passing.
Yeah,
They do owe her a house. I will say that much.
Yeah, she is missing a house now.
Yeah, that's totally unfair. You can't wreck her house. You owe her a house. I want to see what happens when you give her a house.
Like an actual house with replicators and
sonic
showers. I would love to see Jayla come back, and you know, maybe she could be the next, you know,
I would love to see her as a female captain, because I'm sorry, she's got Janeway beat like 10,000 times from Sunday.
Oh yeah, she'd be a great captain one day. Maybe they'll do a spinoff series, spinoff movie series. That would be awesome. I'd love to see Jayla do more, because she was. I love the way she spoke. Like she always called, you know, Kirk James T.
Yes.
I just everything about her was so great, and the way she's like McGumphrey Scotty.
You know, and it may be just because of spending a lot of time with makeup and stuff like that, but I was actually starting to look for inconsistencies in the way that they handled her appearance in the movie, and it was perfect. And usually you can find something, especially with the white. Like, white makeup like that is virtually impossible to keep that perfect. And they did such a good job with it. Like, and it's such a little detail, but like, I got really excited about how well they executed her, not just in the way she acted, but the way they covered her appearance. Mm-hmm. Like that was really well done. I mean, even down to the costuming, like her outfit wasn't sexy. It became sexy because of the way that she carried herself, but it was designed for what her character was and what it did, which was really nice to see.
Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
there was very little sexy time of any in this film. Like, Kirk didn't even score in this movie, which, you know...
No, man, I don't think anybody got laid.
Well, actually, I think Chekhov got laid. During the captain's log, maybe he didn't. Maybe he messed up before he got laid, you know, jizz in his pants or something, and then she threw him out. Because they show, you know, that Orion girl throwing Chekhov out of her quarters.
I was sitting there applauding that. Like, I was like, oh, wow, whatever you did, buddy, I'm glad you... Good for you.
Props, did you get the score with her, or did you mess something up? I don't know.
Who the hell cares? He was in her quarters.
And he was in his boxers.
Exactly. That's all that matters.
Makes you wonder if they went around the cast and said, okay, who's willing to do the scene where they're in their boxers getting kicked out?
You know. Yeah, who's doing the walk of shame?
John Cho. Ooh, me. Oh wait, no, I get to be gay this movie. That's cool.
Well, no, you could still be kicked out.
I guess that's true, but no, but like, even that scene, like in the Franklin, they made this big deal about Sulu being gay, and it was so subtle, it almost like you blink and you'd miss it.
No, I'm so glad they did that. Like, I did not miss that at all. But the fact that they also included his daughter, and like, wow.
The fact that D'Amora is in it at all is great. Yeah, it could have, that just shows that he was doing his due diligence on this stuff, because that's something that I was noticing was happening really well, was the subtle details, little things, because it wasn't just the big stuff. He had a daughter for Sulu. Of all of them, the only one we've seen on screen save Kirk's son was Sulu's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Although, and that's the only one we've seen on screen. So, you know, when he was going to give Sulu a child, he could have given Sulu a boy, but instead gave Sulu a girl, which makes sense, you know, because D'Amora.
Yeah, and I like how, you know, he had her picture up on his console, and it was, you know... I know you were supposed to feel like, you know, there was a sense of danger because Sulu's, you know, husband and daughter were on the Yorktown. Although, this is the farthest... Well, no,
that made sense, though, because that was where everybody was supposed to be able to meet up, have their leave while they did their refit. So, mm-hmm.
So everybody was on there.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually normal in the military to have the spouses and the partners shipped to those locations if they're not already there. That's typical.
Okay, because I just kind of thought that was strange that they'd be out in the middle of nowhere. Just randomly.
No, yeah.
No, especially now if it's a long-term base or something like that. Yeah, they would do that. Especially if they're not going to be seeing their family for an extended period of time. That's totally within the norm.
Okay, that's cool. That makes more sense to me then.
Well, you have to think of the morale of your soldiers.
Yeah.
The morale of your individuals are in this in this industry, and the better and the happier and more content that they are, and the more you meet their needs, the better they are at their job.
Exactly. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Although, going on to all the little details that we loved, those little details that were missing. No mention of Carol Marcus, Kirk's baby mama, at all.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just like, I mean, I know they were trying to get away from Star Trek in the Darkness because of the negative fan reaction to it, but I mean, like, Carol Marcus is still Kirk's baby mama in the original universe. Why are you writing her out?
Well, it wasn't just that. I mean, that's what he says in Star Trek 2 is, you know, you wanted me to stay away, and I did.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he may be staying away. She may be out there right now, tootling away,
but having, at the end of the
building
last,
Genesis and trying to destroy movie, the universe.
Yeah, but in the last movie, she was like, welcome. He was like, welcome to the family. Like, they're part of the family. And they didn't even mention she had gone or anything. She just wasn't there. I mean, they at least in Into Darkness mentioned, you know, Nurse Chapel, you know, briefly, you know, as like a throwaway line. But I mean, it was at least mentioned. And
well, yeah, maybe it's meant to lull us into complacency.
Yeah, I mean, it's been 3 years, so anything could happen. He may have already really made her mad. Clearly, yeah, those two have chemistry of making her mad.
So, and, you know, she might be our main antagonist in the next movie, which is the whole reason why that's currently silent, because somebody's busy building their evil empire.
Yep.
I mean, you never know. You really don't.
She can take after dear old daddy, become Robocop.
Yep. And, you know, there's nothing like a woman scoring. If she pissed at him, she'll do it 10 times better than daddy did. And daddy did a good job.
I just hope we see Klingons, like legit Klingons in the next movie. Like, Into Darkness, you saw a Klingon with his mask off. I don't know why Klingons wear masks anyway. It doesn't make sense. Their head is basically armor. They don't need armor on their head.
I still have, like, I really liked Into Darkness, but I really have an issue with the Klingons.
I mean, I like Into Darkness, too.
I was so disappointed.
And we didn't get to see, like, a full D7 or a full Bird of Prey. These were, like, baby Bird of Preys that were, like,
yeah,
like
little,
six people.
They were, like,
them?
D4s, I think.
It was your little teeny tiny war transporter, some crap like that. Like, I see that as a prisoner ship.
Yeah, they were so small. And, like, we haven't seen, like, the Klingons in full force. We also haven't seen the Enterprise kick butt. The Enterprise has been ripped apart.
Notoriously got its ass kicked.
It got
it's over
it
three.
Got severely damaged by the, you know, the black hole in 2009. It got, like, almost skydived out of existence and Into Darkness. It didn't fire one shot the entire film. And the third one, it got to fire some shots, but they were ineffective, and they just got tore up. Like, I really want to see the Enterprise hold its own. I want to see Kirk as a tactician doing what Kirk does with his ship. I love what Kirk did in this movie, you know, on the ground and getting his crew back together, and that was very Star Trek. It was very good. But we haven't seen Kirk, the space tactician, yet in this rebooted series. And I really, really want to see this in the next movie.
Yeah, that would be really nice to see. You actually, listening to you talk about that, actually brought up one of the finer points that actually gave me chills, is that they gave Sulu the calm again.
Yeah, that was cool.
Oh, I like it.
Mm-hmm.
I like it a lot. I mean, like, Sulu, like, I didn't feel like Sulu's role in this movie was super big. I feel like everyone else had a lot bigger role, except for maybe Sulu.
No, he was a silent badass at the back of your shoulder.
Yeah.
I really feel like that was legitly his only role was that backup badass on our shoulder.
I like that. I mean, I know Zoe Saldana was like, after the first movie, she's like, I hope I get to kick some ass in the second movie. She didn't really get to do anything. She just kind of talked. She got up in the Klingon's face and talked to him. But in this movie, she actually got a fight scene, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, that was nice to see.
I like the way she did it, too. It was, you know, what are you doing? I was here to rescue you. After she punches him. Just like, okay. That was cool. I was like, there you go. That's the way it should work.
Good girl.
I also loved how the Enterprise had an official saucer separation. We always speculated that TOS-era ships had saucer sep, and it was probably never going to come back together again once it separated. But it was so nice to see, like, you know, an actual separation happen, even though it was already in 6 pieces before it separated. But, you know.
Hey, she's a ballerina. She's able to
That's about
remove
all that was
multiple
left
pieces.
Was the neck.
Yeah, and it's like, let's leave the neck behind. Let's get rid of it. We don't need it anymore.
Well, I like their way of explaining that. That sounded very reasonable. Was, you know,
it was trying to draw power.
The ship was still trying to draw power from the warp nacelles, and there was no warp nacelle left. So
yeah, well, and how do you override that when most of the ship's missing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's not something I think the designers would plan.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? We should build the ship with the thought that maybe three quarters.
Well, I don't know. I mean, if the three of us were on that planning committee, yeah, that would probably happen. But no, they probably had no idea. Wait, you know, who's going to be captaining our ship? Oh, shit. We need to think of every single thing that he could possibly do to it, including ramming it into a planet.
Right. Well, like, you know, I love, you know, as much as I hated seeing the Enterprise destroyed, it was a beautiful scene, but it was also, like, heartbreaking. It was extremely hard to watch. Especially because I mean, the sequence probably wasn't any longer than 15 minutes total, but it felt like half the movie. Just like, oh my gosh, Enterprise is getting destroyed.
Getting taken
and not in a bad way, like Generations.
Yeah.
Yeah. In Generations, that was just the longest crash scene that ever existed, ever.
Hey, train wrecks deserve their. No, never mind. Fuck it. You're right.
It
was horrible.
I mean, like, Generations, there's no reason the Enterprise should have blown up and crashed anyway in that movie. The only reason they did it was so they could have a new design in the next movie. There's no way, even without shields, that a galaxy-class ship that's only 7 years old would, you know, lose to a small, tiny bird of prey that's over 100 years old, more than likely.
Well, yeah, and that was actually Marina Sirtis. Boy, I went to see her just before Generations came out.
And she was so excited she had to fly that ship.
Yeah, but she was like, the lesson we have learned is never let Troy pilot the ship. She was like, she's like really sad. Oh, it was funny.
Aww.
Yeah, I know.
You poor felt Troy. Her. It's like the stereotypical bad woman driver trope.
Oh. That's it, what it is. I hate to say, but it's true. That's and the redhead to boot.
I think she wrecked it too. I think that's why it kind of got that scene specifically gets under my skin a little. It's just so stereotypical.
Well, the whole scene makes no sense. Like, Worf, do the Klingon ships have any weakness? I'm like, rotate your shield frequency. You don't need to find a weakness. You will overpower that ship without thinking. And you're trying to hatch some kind of harebrained scheme to, like, disable it somehow? I'm like, just shoot it. Like, what are you doing? What are you wasting time trying to, like, do some kind of weird backhanded covert thing to it? It just didn't make any sense. That ship should be able to overpower it. I mean, the saucer section should be able to overpower it by itself.
Yeah.
It just baffles the mind. But, they really wanted to design a new ship for the next movie, which, you know, granted, they should have had a fleet of Klingons, you know, take out the Enterprise. That would have been a cool, cool thing.
Yeah, yeah. Again, logic.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. But it does make you note and realize that just about any hole could exist in any one of these movies.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
This is true.
But I think Simon Pegg did a really good job with this. And
oh, yeah.
I think my only other major complaint with Star Trek Beyond was, okay, I don't think the fist fight needed to happen. Like, all of Krall's followers died. Like, they all got the Mars Attacks thing and they all exploded. I mean, yeah, he could have killed everyone in the Yorktown with the virus. Then what? You've got no followers, though. I mean, what, are you just gonna sit there by yourself and, like, just, you know, wait for people to come so you can kill them, too? Like, I don't know what his endgame was. And he had no more followers left. He had no more power after his whole armada was destroyed. And also, where did they come from? And also, how come he didn't strip the Franklin? Like, how come the Franklin was still, like, so workable? Those are, like, my biggest problems with the movie.
Rocks to replicators. We had Scotty on board.
He's a miracle worker.
Yep. Yep, well, I mean, that's been the ongoing joke since that actual quote showed up in DS9, the rocks to replicators. But, I mean, that's my thought, is that, you know, that's what happened, is, you know, Scotty just somehow managed to make things appear because he's Scotty. You know,
Krall chose the ancient technology and exploring it and learning how to utilize it over any chance of restoring that. I mean, he very much obviously became one-sided and you know, one track in his thought processes.
I'm sure there's a backstory for it, and I'm looking forward to, like, maybe reading or listening to the audio book version of the movie. Maybe they'll have, like, more, like, backstory on Krall. Because, I mean, to me, that's the biggest thing the movie was missing, is, like, backstory on Krall. Because Krall, like, it was just kind of like, I mean, they went to, he was a captain, but we didn't really... His motivations were really murky. How did he get all the technology to make the swarm? How did he find all the followers? How did he convince them to go with
his crazy
plan?
Oh, that was explained. They explained that.
His followers?
They explained the swarm part and all of that. That was the remainder of the crew. They used the technology that the ancients left behind to extend their lifespans. And
I thought he said there's only three people in the crew left. And there was thousands and thousands of swarm ships.
Yeah, that was the drone technology that had been left behind that he learned how to use, the mining drones. He just adapted them.
But there was people on almost all of them. Or, like, it seemed like there was, because if there's statistically more drones and less people driven,
Well, I'm sure he gained followers. I mean, any fanatic, it's easy enough to gain people's devotion.
I would love to hear, like, where they came from. Like, you know, like, what... And they all kind
of
look...
Where the rest of them came from.
Yeah, I would love to hear, like, more backstory on Krall. And, well, you know, this
we
is...
We had Jayla's parents. She was talking about that as well. So there was obviously...
Yeah, because they've been enslaving a lot of people. There are multiple races that have been left on that planet.
Yeah, I think there have been a lot of people left.
And the original inhabitants that had been there, supposedly.
Yeah, because, Jayla was talking about her parents, and she's clearly not human.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I'm sure other aliens are like, I mean, I would love to hear, like, I wish they would have done more with Krall. And my next complaint is not so much I really was disappointed. This is always, like, a fan fantasy of mine. I always thought Keenzer was just, like, an imaginary thing that Scotty saw.
He is now confirmed as being real.
Sorry,
buddy.
He unfortunately is now real. Like, I always thought that Keenzer was just, like, in Scotty's mind. And if he interacted with anybody, it was because Scotty thought he was interacting with somebody. I just wanted Scotty to be crazy. Like, because...
Well, I mean, he is. That doesn't change the fact that Scotty is crazy. But, you know, I was actually thinking of you when that came up in the movie. I was like, oh, he's going to be so sad.
My theory is, because he apparently is part alien from the Alien franchise, because he sneezes acid.
Or when he sneezes acid.
So that must mean
his blood.
Well,
no, they said that he had a cold. They said he had a cold, and that was really weird. Like, oh, God, what kind of virus makes you do that?
Well, I mean, I don't think it's a virus. I just think it's his biology.
What kind of virus can survive that kind of environment that he catches a virus?
How is the rest of the Enterprise dead if Keenzer's got a virus that makes him sneeze his acid?
Yeah, I right? know. It's like, what
happened? It'd be something as silly as kittens.
I just wish Keenzer was with Scotty the entire movie instead of with the rest of them. I wish they would have found some other way to escape. That way, my fantasy that Keenzer is just Scotty's imagination the entire time.
Yeah, but they gave him his own standalone.
Yeah.
every single person was missing their partner in this movie.
Yeah, their normal partner. Indeed.
That's an interesting thought. I didn't realize that until you said it, but now that you've said it, you're right.
Because Kirk...
Everybody was scrambled up.
Because Kirk and Spock were always together. You know, Scotty and the little guy.
Spock and Bones weren't usually together like that. They had some interactions, but you're not used to seeing that. And now they're forced to work together the entire time. I'm surprised there weren't more insults.
Well, I mean, Spock was definitely hurt really bad. I've heard some people complain about, and including Aaron, complaining about Spock's emotions in this movie. But I'm like, I think they're warranted, especially since he was like his,
Well, I mean,
maybe not near death, but, like, you know, really, really hurt. We've never seen
really injured, and the other Spock had been lost. I mean, this guy is, like, carrying half Vulcan, half Vulcan, and that human side of him's hurting.
Yeah, and Uhura broke up with him, so that's a huge loss. I mean, Zoe Saldana is pretty hot, so I mean, that's a loss.
I don't think she so much as broke up with him as he just didn't step up to keep her.
Well, I think they kind of resolved that by the end, and I think they're sort of back.
Oh, yeah, no, that was definitely fixed. But I didn't have the stones to keep her at the time.
Speaking of that, I loved how they used his necklace they gave her at the tracker, and I love how they all made fun of Spock for so you gave your girlfriend a tracking device? She and Spones was like, I'm glad you don't love and respect me. although it did turn out to be useful, everyone's looking weird at Spock and they gave her a tracking device. It's like, I didn't think of it that way.
it was beautifully done. That was a beautifully executed. If you're going to have something that's, forgive the term, a Chekhov's gun, that's a well played Chekhov's gun. Because the trope of Chekhov's gun is that you see the item that they use in the first few minutes of the film. You know, it's the gun that's above the fireplace will be shown prominently and used later to shoot the bad guy or shoot the good guy or whatever. Yeah. And but the trick to movie making is to hide it so that you saw it, your brain registered it, but you didn't realize that was going to be used. And I think they pulled that off really well in this.
This movie was so well executed.
It really was.
Everything about it. I mean, the only thing, my biggest complaint is the crawl stuff. And that's just because, you know, I know with the Kelvin timeline, they don't want to sacrifice action for, you know, explaining stuff. And that's kind of what they did with Star Trek in the Darkness. The book explained a lot of stuff that people complained about. So I'm complaining a little bit about the crawl stuff. It really doesn't take away from how great the movie was. The movie was fantastic.
That's okay. We'll revisit these issues in a little while.
Well, I'm sure.
A few months down the road.
And I'm sure any of the guests we have on in the near future will be, you know, hey, well, what'd you think of the movie? And we'll have probably a mini discussion of the movie, you know, before we get to a main topic. It'll probably come up a bunch in the nearest future, so.
Oh, yeah.
I hope you like Star Trek Beyond.
And even if you didn't, you know, that perspective, all those different perspectives are going to be very interesting to see. Well, here, one of those things.
For sure. One of them. What about you guys? Did you guys have any standout things you didn't care for?
That's a good question. Because I was thinking about this because there were points in there where I was like, well, but it wasn't so dramatic that it was like, that's it. And in fact, now, as time has gone on, I can't even remember what it was that kind of bothered me, you know, because I was just thinking about that and I was like, I think the fact that we have this long discussion about the Kelvin, or not the Kelvin, the Franklin, which, by the way, is named after the director's father, Frank.
Frank Lynn.
Yes. So I thought that was nice.
If you caught the little green alien right when the Enterprise arrived at the Yorktown, the little green alien boy was Justin Lin's son.
Oh, yeah. And Sulu's husband was the co-writer, Doug Young.
Oh, nice.
So that was kind of cool. So he just canonized himself. I thought that was kind of funny.
you got to make your mark.
Yep. And apparently they kissed in the original version, but it was edited out. Which that was something a friend of mine who is gay, he was kind of offended by that a little because he was like, oh, come on, you went so far. And then I was like,
And then not use it.
And he said, you know, it was 3 seconds. What was the problem? And then he brought up a point that I hadn't thought of, which is that had they kissed, it would never be acceptable in Russia or China. They would just not even bother to show it. And so they would lose that market entirely.
True. Which
and we know. And the other thing that I've noticed is in canon with Trekkies, in canon can be the deleted scenes.
Yeah, because that will probably be scenes. Yeah, that they will probably add that in on the whatever collector's edition, so we'll still have it.
Right. So it happened. It occurred, but those people who watch the non-extended version or without the deleted scenes will just assume that they're really good friends or maybe that's his brother. You know what I mean? And they and so that way you can go either direction with it, even though we all know that yeah. in real life that and I've been thinking about that a lot too, watching the old series, the original series. It's not that hard to just assume that George Takei's Sulu was gay too. I mean, that works. He fits.
He had the hots for Uhura.
Only in the Mirror Universe.
Yeah.
No.
That's true.
Yeah, only in the Mirror Universe. I went back and looked it over.
No, in the Naked Now.
All he did was just be a swashbuckler. He was playing
but he was like, you know.
Yeah, but he wasn't, I mean, he was saying, I'll protect you, my fair lady, or fair maiden, or whatever. And, you know, and that's just acting like a swashbuckler. That's not necessarily...
Yeah, that was filling the role.
Yeah, that's just playing the role. And you know, like I said, I have some friends who are...
George Takei's original statement about that, about Sulu being in the film, he said it wasn't part of Gene's vision. And so, I mean, like, I'm pretty sure... I thought he would be flattered by it when I first heard it. And then the fact that he said he didn't think it was a good idea just goes to show that he believes in what Gene believed in, and you know, in TOS Sulu wasn't gay.
Well, and though I've been kind of thinking about this, there's a couple of things that I've thought about. One, he feels that way because he's protective of his character, and that's totally admirable. I'm totally on board with that. But I've been thinking about, first of all, I went back and looked, and there wasn't any instance where he was involved in a relationship with a woman short of these one-off things. I mean, we didn't get the Kirk sleeping with a woman scenes, you know, with Sulu.
His part in TOS wasn't all that big.
Right. So it could be feasible. But also, he got A World Enough in Time with Phase 2. Where he was trapped in a shuttlecraft with an ensign whatever her name was, and they got stuck on a planet and ended up being stuck in a time warp for, you know, 30 years and having a daughter, which was brought back to the ship. And so I'm wondering whether he feels like that's part of the fabric of his character, because it was a very, very good part. Mm-hmm. And it was a really beautiful piece to Sulu. But again, it wasn't canon. You know, so it's like, you know, I kind of was looking at this going, you know, you could pretty much see that. And then the part where Uhura was hitting on Sulu in Mirror Mirror, well, we also had Ezri Dax hitting on the Intendant. And in the normal universe, Kira is by no means bisexual or a lesbian. Yet in the Mirror Universe, she's definitely interested in Ezri.
So, in the Mirror Universe, she's interested in herself.
Yeah, in the Mirror Universe, she's interested in everything.
She's like...
But the point is that, you know, obviously, in the Mirror Universe, the sexuality thing gets bent and twisted, too.
Well, like, you know, I saw a cast interview for Star Trek Beyond a couple days before the movie came out, just on YouTube randomly, and... Like, they mentioned, John Cho was, you know, they talked to him briefly about, like, you know, he being gay, and then the fact that he had a daughter, and John Cho was just like, I just like that Sulu's promiscuous. So, like, maybe Sulu's bi. I mean, like, it's just, I mean, it could
work.
I mean, maybe that's perfect, I mean, that
good
could just,
for him.
That could be perfectly acceptable. Just, he does whatever he
does.
I think the biggest thing... And the most obvious thing about Star Trek is being missed in this analysis, though. Star Trek has always adjusted to what is going on in the current social climate. It has always addressed what is going on, and it has always gone into it with absolutely no shame. But it's given people a way to interpret it in their own means so that they don't put themselves in an uncomfortable position. So I think what is happening is that they're embracing the different changes in our culture, while doing it in a way not to put anybody in the spotlight, so to speak, but have it there and have it admired and have it respected. I think it's also kind of a nod to his relationship in life.
Mm-hmm.
And that, well, you know, this is, you know, I think it's just a show of respect.
I think they specifically said that they gave him a husband to be a nod, an homage to Brad Takei, who's with George all the time and stuff like that.
And I think that's beautiful. And the fact that he's there taking care of their daughter, like, wow. You know, that's amazing. That was a very beautiful way to portray him.
I thought it was wonderful. I was just thinking about all of this, not the controversy, because it really hasn't been that controversial, because most Trekkies are glad to finally see it.
I'm just glad they didn't make a new character just to have a gay scene. Like I do agree with Simon Pegg that making Sulu that way
would have just been token, and we would have been like, well, whatever, and it would have been a throwaway, and that really would have been annoying.
I mean,
this was perfectly done.
I mean, just having it in there just to do it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah,
and it was so subtle in this one; it was almost like. It almost didn't even matter.
Yeah, I agree.
Yep. It was just very casual. It was very, this is what it is, and it was casual, and it was confident at the same time.
Yeah.
It almost looked like he was grabbing his butt, and then just like, oh, the hands are on their back. Okay, the hands are on their back. But, like, me and Aaron...
Hand check!
Yeah, me and Aaron were talking about that. It was pretty funny.
Right after, you know, right, I wouldn't blame him. After you've been out for that long, hell yeah, buddy, go for it. You've earned it.
It's good times.
Yeah, but I think Faith's absolutely right. The end result, of course, is that they're finally able to do this. Takei had said that he had talked to Gene Roddenberry about having a homosexual character or a bisexual character, and Roddenberry was all for it. But the networks absolutely would not do it.
Well, you know, that he was afraid. That and he just had an interracial kiss. The interracial kiss was such a big thing. I mean,
yeah, I mean, well, but I mean, even bigger. But we're talking about Next Gen, because this was after Takei had sort of come out to the cast and crew, and the cast and crew knew he was talking to Gene about that. But what he was saying, you know, this is for Next Gen, and he was saying that there was just no way they could pull it off. When Deep Space Nine had Dax kissing another woman, there was like a protest, like march from the South. And like, they were like, some stations refused to air the episode. And it's the same stuff that they did with the interracial kiss. And, you know, Gene's argument, and he had been making this argument all along, was he wants to push the envelope just enough that the South turns off some stations, but not all of them. You know, and that's what he'd been trying to do the whole time. So he felt like putting an actual homosexual character in there would cause the show to be pulled. And so he wouldn't be able to go any further. And I understood that. That makes some sense, and I get that.
Well, I mean, like... in the South, I mean, if you think about it, I don't know if you've heard her. I'm not sure. Were you with us with Bonnie Moss guy?
Yes.
Yeah, like the fact that she said that the gallery in North Carolina was the first time they ever showed nudes, and that was Leonard Nimoy's work. And that was just like a year ago.
Yeah.
You know, honestly, I'm in North Carolina, and even though... There have been rights granted in that by the Supreme Court. I can tell you for a fact they're still not recognized. Yeah. And that's just the nature. That's the culture of the people here. And honestly, I don't care if I get any flack about it, because I've been fighting for gay and lesbian rights for a very long time. This is, to me, is just irrational that somebody else has to define happiness by their terms. That doesn't work. I'm sorry. Society is not like that. Right. And just the fact that you'd be so narrow-minded that you would shut off stations to not expose a culture to a possible opposing perspective is just so ignorant.
Just in case somebody might be offended. Oh, come on. Really?
Oh, no. It's not that somebody will be offended. It's the fact that they're right.
Right.
And oh, my God, now that perspective that is actually correct is being aired, our brainwashing policies are going to disappear. So, yes. I mean, that it was fear. It's always been fear.
Yeah, I agree. It's just, and it's you know, of course, we're all going to think that it's silly because we're Trekkies and we you know, infinite
we're
diversity.
Open-minded individuals.
You know, we'll just kind of like, but I still think about that from time to time, reading all the books that I've read about the behind the scenes and all the stuff that they, and you know, the fact that the only real reason the interracial kiss ended up on there was because Bill Shatner and
Michelle Nichols flubbed,
botched the scene so much that they didn't have time left to keep anything but the kiss.
Oh, yeah, they had filmed only, alternate only, scenes, and
they couldn't keep them all because they botched them.
Yeah, Shatner and Nichelle messed them up on purpose, which is awesome.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's kind of one of those things. It's like, well, I don't know. I find it intriguing. And who knows? Maybe that will be something that will occur in Discovery, you know?
Well, it does say STD after all, so
STD.
We are in for all sorts of treats, I suppose.
Yeah, and they've been saying that because they're on streaming, they're not limited to a lot of things that Star Trek's been limited to before. And this has been something that they've been talking about a lot, which is that they can go places, they can go where no man's gone before, they can go places that they haven't been able to go to before because it's been verboten, you know, or whatever. You know, I don't know what that means necessarily.
Well, they think that because they're putting it on the internet, that it's going to be accessible to everybody. And the thing is that clearly they don't understand what government filtering is. Because it is very possible that certain states suddenly go, yeah, no, that's not going to be allowed, and shut it off. And that's in place and possible to happen.
Yeah,
so it's entirely possible. This will be interesting.
Oh,
I'm curious.
I'm excited to see what they're doing with the All Access thing.
Yeah.
I'm disappointed that it's only going to be 13 episodes, but it's supposed to be a strong arc, which is a positive about it being 13 episodes. And maybe they'll be able to spend more money per episode, so we get, you know, maybe more ship designs and more other things happening in the episodes.
Yeah, maybe. That would be interesting.
Because, I mean, that was one thing that was sort of painful about watching TNG and stuff like that. Whenever you saw another ship, it was basically an Excelsior. It was almost always an Excelsior. You saw, you know, if it was another Federation ship.
Until they started building better models.
Well, until CG, you know, when CG started seeing, you know, in Voyager. Voyager's whenever everything started going to CG, and that wasn't even until like halfway through Voyager, everything went fully CG. And you got, you know, the Equinox and the ship I love that I can't remember the name of right now. The Prometheus.
The Prometheus.
You get these really cool ships that, like, wow, this isn't a rehash of, like, you know, an Excelsior, or, you know, a Excelsior with a different nacelle on it. Like, you know, these are new ships, and, like, it wasn't until the CG era where you started seeing, you know, actual new ships show up. And, I mean, in Best of Both Worlds.
Honestly, I miss seeing the models, like, because those take so much skill to make. They look so much better.
I miss seeing the models, too, but they never built new models for, you know, TNG, unless it was an alien ship, then they'd build a new model. But for Federation ships, we've got an Excelsior, that'll work.
God, I would volunteer in a frickin' heartbeat.
That would be awesome.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't mean to question, really, but I mean, we got but I also kind of don't want to downplay the work of Doug Drexler, because he was part of that team that built all of the models, like Wolf 359, and you got a lot of different ships there. But then after that, he was on board with the Nebula class, and that's an actual model.
I love the Nebula class. That's a beautiful ship.
Because, like, the Phoenix, the Phoenix was a Nebula, and I mean, there's a long discussion about that dish on the back, that specialized dish.
Yeah.
Because they built that dish, like, because he was given instructions to make it an AWACS dish. And so he did. He went and bought an AWACS model and put that dish on the back, and that's why it looks like an AWACS dish, and nobody liked it. So later they built that triangular dish that you saw, you know, and stuff like that. But I mean, those were practicals. In fact, I think Next Gen stayed practicals pretty much almost to the end, because DS9 had practicals almost until Voyager launched.
Well, I think Voyager was the only one. Voyager was almost all CG halfway through. I think DS9, like during the heart of the Dominion War, was all CG. Because that's part of the reason why they're not bringing Deep Space Nine back to Blu-ray. A, because the biggest reason is Next Gen didn't make enough money on their Blu-ray releases. Well, they charged $100 like per freaking season, so I don't know how they thought they were going to make money on it when people were,
or where they thought that was going to go. Yeah,
yeah. I mean, if you lower the price, more people will buy it. I mean, Amazon had sales sometimes where they were $50 a season, but that's still a lot for a season of television, especially for, like, you know, 25-year-old television. But that's the first reason why DS9 isn't. And the second reason is, from what I've read, is that a lot of the Dominion War stuff, like seasons like 5, 6, and 7, was all CG, and there's no trace of that original stuff to high definitionify.
Right.
So they have to, like, remake it all from scratch.
Yeah.
So that's more expensive than what the, you know, that's way more expensive than them redoing the next gen set. So, and if they don't think it'll sell as well, they're probably not going to do it. We probably won't see it for like another decade or two.
Yeah.
Honestly. By then, CG will be so cheap they can do it. But right now, it's not cheap enough for them to revisit all that just to re-release them on Blu-ray. Which is a shame, but. And there were so many ships that got blown up in the Dominion War.
Yeah. Yeah, we got to see all the Borg fighters and stuff like that. That was cool.
Okay, now that you mentioned the Borg, that actually brings me back to another thought with the way that he was, his body was metamorphosing every time he took on any energy from any of the aliens. Like, he had the different aspects.
And he kept sucking life from humans because the Enterprise crew was the most recent one, and that's because he started looking.
Man, more I human. Was getting such chills of like, holy crap, this feels like a Borg precursor.
Yeah,
like big time on that. So I was wondering if anybody else had that feel. Now that you brought up the B word,
I didn't think Borg. I mean, the technology that they mentioned that kept them young or alive was also very vague, but like. His original look, he looks very Jem'Hadar-ish. I wonder if, like, the first race that found that planet or whatever...
And then he has...
Well, maybe not Dominion, because Dominion always, you know, genetically engineered other races into what they wanted. You know,
Well, and he had Jawless stripes. At a couple of different points, he had Jawless stripes.
Yes,
and then the frill of the one captain that was... That they rescued initially.
Yeah. So, like, he looked kind of Jem'Hadar-ish at the very beginning. So, it'd be interesting to see, like, you know, what... I mean, just some backstory. I would love to see some backstory on it. Maybe there'll be some comics. Because I know they flesh out stuff in the comics. I mean, they did, like, a 4 or 5-part Khan book for Star Trek in the Darkness that goes into Khan's backstory. So, maybe they'll do something like that with Krall. I would love to read that.
I completely agree.
Yeah, that'd be really nice to see.
Any other thoughts on Star Trek Beyond, other than the fact that we loved it, and it was amazing, and we've gone on all these side tangents, which is what we do here on Synthaholics. Woo!
Hey, if we don't wander, something's wrong.
Something's wrong. We're too sober.
Or somebody's sober. Yeah, I was going to say, wait a minute.
If we don't wander, not all those who are lost wander.
No, we do it on purpose and with style.
Yep. This is intentional.
Usually. So.
Yeah, I don't think I have anything else to say, really, on this.
So, you definitely liked it better than Into Darkness?
Oh, I loved Into Darkness. It felt like home. I said that whenever I left. It felt like home, you know?
Yeah.
It really did feel like, you know, this was sort of home base. I don't know what you want to call it.
It felt like Star Trek, and that's what made me happy. And that's what's got me a little bit scared for the next one, because they said they already know they're bringing Thor back. For the movie, which means there's already a script, and it sounds like they're bringing back the original script writers from Star Trek Beyond. You made a good point last time, Guy, that you said maybe let it cook a little bit longer, but since everyone is loving this movie so much, why not let Simon Pegg do it again? Why not let Justin Lin do it again?
That's what I was thinking. This is a good combo.
I would love Justin Lin to direct the next Star Trek film. You know, I was scared at first.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's so funny, because we were all like, oh no... And he actually did a great job. You know, he did a beautiful job with it. It was wonderful.
It shows that he cares and respects Star Trek, which is, you know, I was dubious about it at the beginning, and then, you know, he started...
We're always worried about that, though.
Yeah, but he showed so much care for it, the fact that he used that picture from the original movies, like, just all the callbacks.
He carried the flame. That was the most important thing, because that's something we've pointed out throughout, like, that was the big thing with Nimoy, is that he very much kept things alive, and I very much feel like they continued that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree.
Let Simon Pegg help co-write the next one. Get Justin to direct it. Please.
Yes, please.
Please. This was, like, the most.
Let's do it again.
This was the most Star Trek movie, and I still believe since Star Trek VI. This is the most Star Trek feeling movie.
So yeah,
I just hope they keep doing this, like make it awesome. And it's still super accessible. Like to me, like this almost could have been the first movie.
Yeah,
like any. I mean, I guess for Trekkies, yes, maybe not for new people. But I mean, this almost could have been like the first movie, and it would have been totally fine. Like it makes sense.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Yeah. It does have enough context to have a standalone feel.
Which is amazing, since this is like a third sequel, and there's like they didn't have to explain anything; it just worked, and it was beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, that's in each of them, they've actually covered just enough of the backstory that's all you really needed.
I mean, the only thing you need in context, really, for this movie is like the first 10 minutes, to Star Trek 2009, because the only thing really referenced is Kirk's dad's death. And that's the biggest difference, because Kirk's dad was still alive. You know, we never saw him, but I mean, he never talked about his dad dying in the original series, so he must have been still alive or died of natural causes, you know, as he got old. Because Kirk wasn't haunted by his father's death in the original series. So I mean, like that's the only thing you really need to know. And if you're a new person, it doesn't even matter, because I mean, his dad died. Okay, and they're drinking and they're sad about it. I mean,
yeah.
You don't even
okay.
You even
daddy issues. We already understand,
right?
But you know, I thought the whole crew got the shine, which made the movie beautiful. Kirk was way more mature. He felt way more like Kirk than he did in the other two films. Like more mature.
Yeah, I'll agree with that.
He felt more mature. Like he's less.
He was like less reckless.
Yeah. He felt very worn out. To be honest.
Oh yeah, he definitely felt worn out at the beginning, but I think that weary also translated into maturity, where he's like, okay, it's not just all fun and games, you know. I understand that now. So
there is still a middle ground. Yeah, you could definitely see that transition in him. It was nice to see him regain that.
Yeah, and then he, you know, they also were hinting that he was going to be a vice admiral, you know, toward the beginning, and then at the end he's like, no, I don't want to sit by him on the desk.
We don't fly, do we? Nope, never mind.
Being out there, that is my one great, you know, destiny. It's like Spock said in Star Trek VI. That's
yes.
Your one great, you know, that's your one calling. So stick with it. I love that, and I would love for like deleted scene to have like something from like Star Trek VI come up, you know, where you know. Old Spock tells young Spock about that or something, like through a hologram. That would be, or like, you know, through a recording.
Yeah, some way he can find that. Yeah.
That would be great. And just how that, you know, translates over and maybe tells Kirk about it. I would love to see that, like a deleted scene or something. Cause I mean, I love that Kirk was melancholy at the beginning, and then he got stuck on a horrible situation, and then he made his way through it, and he's like, that's what's for me.
I felt very relatable.
Definitely.
It was that moment of that we've all hit where it's just like, damn, I don't know if I could do this anymore. It's like, wait, yep, still got it.
Yeah, it was great. I liked that a lot. So that was Star Trek Beyond.
Yes.
Our official talk about it. It's just great. And we loved it. Thank you all for listening. We wanted to let you know that our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or at Warp 11 on Twitter. You can find us at Synthaholics.com. You can email us at Synthaholics@yahoo.com. On Twitter, we're at Synthaholic Duo. Me personally, I'm David_J_Dungpin on Twitter. Aaron is Blackbird2004.
I'm at Faith Hertzberg on Twitter.
I'm at USS Tamerlan on Twitter, and you can find me on USS Tamerlan on Facebook as well, and at GS Davis Art.
It would be great if you guys would give us likes, give us some stars, give us some reviews on iTunes. We would love to hear your reviews. We would read them on the air. Any kind of feedback is more than welcome. We want to know what you like, what you don't like, so we can keep making the show better. If you want to donate to us, we have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/synthaholics. And we'd love that. We've got bonus commentary episodes that we put out once a month for that, for certain tiers. And some other rewards, so please go check that out. Guy Davis, if you want to follow his art, because he does Tamerlan and soon Witches of Flame, he's at patreon.com/GSDavisArt. And he also has a side podcast called Rocky Mountain Geek Tank, so check them out as well. They are a more generalized geek podcast.
Yes, I'm their Trekkie.
And he's our Trekkie, too.
Yes, I'm everybody's Trekkie. Okay.
Well, thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper.
And we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.